Next up, number 719, a prime number for this St. Paddy Day, March 17th, 2022.
Hi there, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. Thanks for tuning into the Next Step with Father Vazgen. We are the voice of Armadoxy, a weekly podcast started in 2008 that looks at life through the lens of Armenian Orthodoxy. If you're joining us for the first time, we're so glad you're here. And if you're a regular listener, welcome back. In these weekly episodes, you will find that Father Vazgen's messages are timely, thought-provoking, and based on the solid principles of Christ's love, faith, and hope. Now, let's get ready to take the next step.
Now, this one's really got me baffled. I can't understand this one. Like, what is there about war that we don't get? It's destructive. It's horrible. They're showing pictures. Hell on earth, they're calling it. Yes, here we are, the fourth week. I know. Been coming to you every week and sharing with you thoughts about this and thoughts about peace. And why is peace unattainable? I remember John Lennon once saying, if people wanted peace, there would be peace. In the same way that if they wanted an extra television set, which was big time back then, if they wanted an extra television set, they would have two television sets. Well, why aren't we wanting peace? Is it because it's just too obvious? That it's just too easy? That we tend to complicate things? I mean, I read this incredible piece the other day by a group of Christians. In fact, I'm going to share with you some of it. A group of Christians who are writing against the war. And they're justifying it with Bible quotations. No, wait, don't get me wrong. No, they're not justifying the war. They're justifying themselves wanting peace. Okay? No. Yeah, I've heard that one too, where they justify the war by quoting Bible. No, this one, they are justifying themselves for wanting peace by quoting Bible, by saying that in the Bible, it says in Romans, St. Paul talks to the people and says this. In Corinthians, we read this. We read the apostle, and then they give all kinds of Old Testament little scriptural passages and everything. I'm going, what? This is wild. Like, really? I mean, you need to justify wanting peace? It just doesn't make sense. And I started thinking, like, why are we complicating things? Remember back in we're going to take a page out of the playbook from the Protestants, right? Do you remember the what would Jesus do? WWJD, what would Jesus do? They had like little pins, they had little bracelets, they had little charms, WWJD, and everybody knew, what would Jesus do? So if you were in a predicament, you would say, what would Jesus do? And you would solve the situation, that predicament, by thinking it out, by using your head and saying, wait a minute, what would Jesus do? You see somebody over there who's hurting, who's been abandoned and in need of support. What would Jesus do? Oh, he would go there and he would be a support to that person, right? You have a couple options in your life. Go this path or go that path. You think in your head, what would Jesus do? Which way would he go? And so you start thinking about it. It's a very simple, simple little formula, right? But it works, doesn't it? What would Jesus do? And just... yesterday, I got a call from a group, one of our church groups. They wanted to oust somebody because they had heard allegations. This is actually what was sad about it. It's among the young people that are doing this. But this is the kind of world we're in. They've heard allegations about this or that, and they wanted to oust that person. And they're asking me, and all I could tell them is, what would Jesus do? What is an allegation? An allegation is not fact. It means somebody has pointed you out. Why don't you take it easy for a minute? Catch your breath. evaluate the situation before you make any judgment, because yours is not to judge. We have systems in place that will judge. And those judgments will come through. These are courts of law, and they will do it. We are not called to judge. We are called here to understand. And that understanding comes through the love that we have, just as God loved us. And the way he loved us was trying to understand us by taking on that human form. He became one of us, right? What would Jesus do? Would he just go on allegations that this person, well, they tried that, didn't they, right? They brought in people. They brought in a woman who was caught in adultery. They brought her to him. Allegations. Nobody had seen anything, you know, the allegations. Jesus didn't even wonder if she was an adulterer, if she was a prostitute, what she was. He just says, go, your sins are forgiven. I don't judge you. And he's the only one who had the right to judge, and he didn't judge. So what are we doing? What are we doing? And now when it comes to the war, we're sitting around and we're talking about justifying wanting peace. This is bizarre to me. And so let's take a page from that playbook of what would Jesus do. How about this one? WWJB. Who would Jesus bomb? Think about it, all right? Who would Jesus bomb? When we're talking about war, when we're seeing what's going on over there. And I'm bringing this up because the Russian Orthodox Church, in the person of their patriarch, Kirill, has decided that they will side with the Russian state. Now, they're making up these stories about it has to do with they don't want to get westernized, and they brought in the, you know, the, because of LGBT rights that have been given in the West, and the East wants to stay pure. Yeah, this is all nonsense, and we all know that, right? But the reality of it is that people are dying every day, and you've got a head of a church who's looking at it and justifying it. Justifying that bombing, when a very simple, simple little statement could be made. WWJB, who would Jesus bomb? Can you imagine Jesus sitting in a bomber and bombing people? Absurd, right? And so is war. So is war. And we're not saying it. As a head of a state, as a head of a church, you need to be able to say that we, yes, we are against war, because who would Jesus bomb? This is what's bizarre about all of this. So, you've got the Russian patriarch who has a title of His Holiness. There's some like only 5 or 6 of them that have a His Holiness title. And you've got His Holiness Pope Francis, the Pope, the head of the Roman Catholic Church, right? Well, as head of the Roman Catholic Church, we know that he is very, very concerned about issues of peace, of injustice, of poverty. How do we know this? Well, because he comes out and he says, I'm against it. How do we know this? Not only does he say it, he does something about it. He goes out of his comfort zone to do something about it. And so it was yesterday when he made a video conference call with the Russian patriarch Kirill. Now, before we go there, and I'm going to share it with you in just a minute, okay? Before we go there, what I'd like to do is start off with this declaration, okay? This is what I was talking about earlier. Like, do we need to justify ourselves for wanting peace? Well, I guess so. I guess there are people who feel that. Okay, so this is off of a page. It's called Public Orthodoxy, Bridging the Ecclesial, the Academic, and the Political, the Orthodox Christian Studies Center of Fordham University. Wow, big time, right? Okay, listen to this. a declaration on the Russian world. Muski Mir teaching. Okay, so this is important that we understand what's going on. So this is sort of a background, and it's kind of interesting. This stuff is interesting here. The Russian invasion of Ukraine on February 24th is a historic threat to a people of the Orthodox Christian tradition. More troubling still for Orthodox believers, the senior hierarchy of the Russian Orthodox Church has refused to acknowledge this invasion, issuing instead vague statements about the necessity for peace in light of events and hostilities in Ukraine, while emphasizing the fraternal nature of the Ukrainian and Russian people as part of Holy Rus, or Rus, blaming the hostilities on the evil West, and even directing their communities to pray in ways that actively encourage hostility. Got it? So the head of the Russian Orthodox Church is out there saying that this is happening because of the West and their ways coming in into our territory, into our areas. Now, as we talked about in previous Next Steps, I think it was last week and the week before, you know, this is basically the same communion. You're talking about the Ukrainian Orthodox Church, the Russian Orthodox Church, but the Ukrainians split off from them. I believe it was in 2013. They had a split and a difference. And of course, this is one of the problems that you get into when you have these national churches. And I'm not excluding ourselves when we talk about the Armenian Orthodox Church, which I've shared with you many times. This is one of the major difficulties we have within the church, is this idea that people want to propagate about a double mission. It's interesting because this Saturday we're doing a conference called the Armenian Christian Family, Reclaim. And those of you who know or are familiar with it, you know that this is a series of conferences that we've done, reclaiming something that we haven't lost, but definitely something that we want to get back, claim it and reclaim it, okay? And this year, the topic is reclaiming the Armenian Christian family. So we've got these flyers and we've got advertising and it's all over. It's going to be taking place this Saturday. So we've put it all over. And then, you know, people comment, you know, they love to comment about things that there was a cute one the other day. We had made a video about the reclaim, and somebody says, when are we getting a church in Idaho? The Russians have one and we don't have one. Whoa, how do we get there? You know, like, you try to figure out what's the connection. Well, I got another one. This one was kind of interesting. It says, we don't need to reclaim Christian values. We need to reclaim Armenian or Armenian values, something to that effect. And I'm just looking at it. I'm going, okay. And if that's what you want, why aren't you doing it? What do you mean we need to? Who are you? What do you mean we need to? If you need to do it, do it. I feel we need to come back to this Christian understanding. And so I'm doing it. I'm putting together a conference. You don't like it, that's fine. But don't come to it. Don't support it. But this idea that somehow, oh, I'm going to write it on Facebook and I'll show them, you know, come on, you know. So I'm just like looking at it and I'm going, okay, what does this guy want? He wants to reclaim Armenian values. Okay, good. And what are those? They are actually defined by everything that we know as Christians. Did you know, for instance, I just found this out. There, in all the worlds, different worlds, all the nations of the world, there was only one country, one nation, that has never had slavery. Yeah, you guessed it. Armenia, the only one that hasn't had slavery. Okay, well, what do you attribute that to, right? Thank you, Adam, for sending me this one. This one was really fascinating. It's like a mind blower when you think about it, because you could understand maybe one or two different countries. No, you can't even understand that. You can understand maybe 3 or 4, 10 of them never had slavery, but one has never had slavery. Everyone else has. Interesting, huh? And this is the way I understand it, the relationship between the nation and the religion and the faith. If you want to be a good whatever it is, in our case Armenian, you want to be a good Russian, whatever, learn the values that come from being a Christian. If you are a good Christian and you understand what Jesus Christ is teaching, the teachings of having compassion, having love, having faith, dreaming, and making those dreams come true. His parables of taking what God has given you and using them, exploiting them, taking them out, and understanding that your talents are God-given. Once you get all of this together, if you're a good Christian, you become a good person. And therefore, your nation, your nationality, your ethnicity, it benefits from this, not the other way around. And so I try to keep that in mind as I read through this rather difficult piece, but let's get through it. The support of many of the hierarchy of the Moscow Patriarchate for President Vladimir Putin's war against Ukraine is rooted in a form of Orthodox ethno-philitist religious fundamentalism, totalitarian in character, called Ruski Mir Orthe, Russian world, a false teaching which is attracting many of the Orthodox Church and has even been taken up by the far right and Catholic and Protestant fundamentalists. The speech of Russian President Vladimir Putin and Patriarch Kirill of Moscow have repeatedly invoked and developed Russian world ideology over the last 20 years. In 2014, when Russia annexed the Crimea and initiated a proxy war in the Donbas area of Ukraine, right up until the beginning of the full-fledged war against Ukraine and afterwards, Putin and Patriarch Kirill have used Russian world ideology as a principal justification for the invasion. The teaching states that there is a transnational Russian sphere of civilization called Holy Russia or Holy Rus, which includes Russia, Ukraine, and Belarus, and sometimes Moldova and Kazakhstan, as well as ethnic Russians and Russian-speaking people throughout the world. Now, you know that Holy Trinity, that unholy Trinity they talked about. These were the ones responsible for the end of the Soviet Union, or the collapse. Well, actually, it was actually the leaders of these three areas. At the time, you had Yeltsin, right, who was the head of Russia proper, and you had the Ukraine and the Belarus. So to get rid of the Soviet Union, because Russia was, even though it's the biggest player in the Soviet Union, it was still just a player in the Soviet Union. So you had Yeltsin coming out and meeting with the Belarus and the Ukrainians, and it was in a forest, I forgot the name of it. They came to an agreement that it would be dismantled. Okay. Well, we know the rest after that. You know, the Soviet Union was gone, but Russia was there. And then the issues now are between Russia and the United States, whereas before it was the Soviet Union, now Russia. And you know, people use these words interchangeably, but the Soviet Union was definitely a different entity in that it had other partners, it had other nations in it besides Russia. And again, for all intents and purposes, Russia was the main player, wasn't it? Okay. Let me continue with this. The teaching states that there is a transnational, yes, the three of them over there, a common language, Russian, a common church, the Russian Orthodox Church, Moscow Patriarch, and a common patriarch, the Patriarch of Moscow, who works in symphony with a common president, national leader, Putin, to govern this Russian world, as well as upholding a common distinctive spirituality, morality, and culture. Against the Russian world, so the teaching goes, stands the corrupt West, led by the United States and Western European nations, which has capitulated a liberalism, globalization, Christianophobia, homosexual rights, prompted in gay parades, and military secularism, and over and against the West and those Orthodox who have fallen into schism and error, such as the Ecumenical Patriarch Bartholomew and other local Orthodox churches that support him, stands the Moscow Patriarchate, along with Vladimir Putin, as the true defender of Orthodox teaching. Okay, so now here we get into all of this. So the Orthodox teaching is in favor of this war, according to this, right? So the rest of the statement, you know, I'll put a link on today's show notes so you can read it. It's interesting. It's very, very interesting, and it needs to be gone through. But my point here is, the rest of the document is filled with these kind of clips. No kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would fight so that I should not be delivered. So says Jesus in John chapter 18. And it goes on and on. And it's justifying the point of peace, the position of peace. Why? How about just saying, what would Jesus do? Who would Jesus bomb? When would you ever expect that Jesus would stand up and kill somebody? It's ridiculous. So let's bring it down to the bare essence of what we're talking about Christianity. Peace. Peace is what we're after. And everything else that points to war, no matter how bad it is, Jesus tolerated and put up with everybody. We're not here to be picking and choosing who gets into heaven and who doesn't. What's going to corrupt us and what won't. The war will corrupt much more than any of these things that they're scared of. Because there's going to be generations that will be affected by it. And if you want the proof, just look at what's going on in the world around you. People who've gone through war, through genocide. It's not just their pain. It's a pain that their children and their children's children and generations to come have to deal with. My point being here, you don't need to justify your position for peace. Who would Jesus bomb? Absolutely no one. They're all his children. They're all his children. So let's start looking at one another as brothers and sisters and understand that we have to bring about this peace in a real way by extending ourselves to one another, by stopping this language of hate and justification. That's the other one too. Well, let's take a break right now, okay? We do every week just to give us a chance to digest what was said. I'm going to come back and we're going to read what's going on between the Pope and Patriarch Kirill. For today, here's my pick, Song of the Day.
Thank you.
by Vache Hovsepian. That's off of a old album, pretty old album. I think this is about, at least has to be about 45 years old, called Ucht Gertai. Vache Hovsepian, one of the prominent duduk players of the time back in the last century, right? I'd say about 40 years ago. Anyway, I wanted to play that because the point, the sadness that the duduk plays. You know, if you think about it, most people who do not know Armenians from the outside will at least relate to the duduk and say, oh, that's the Armenian instrument. And when you think about it, what have we offered this world but the pain and the suffering that the sound of the duduk makes? It's very contemplative, reflective, meditative. We have offered so much, but this is the one thing that gets highlighted so often. Of course, thank you to Peter Gabriel several years ago, who brought it into prominence in Western music and fusion and everything. But you know, we were talking about the effects of war, the effects of trauma that goes on and on and on. And certainly when you hear the duduk and you hear the music of the duduk, you understand that that trauma is not something that's going to be erased quickly. And we have to keep this in mind as we're talking and looking at war unfolding in front of us. You know, what's happening today in Europe is history repeating itself, but also in unfolding. In other words, we're going to be looking at this several, if we're alive, if, yeah, if the world survives it. And at least people in the Southern Hemisphere will make it, right? Nobody cares about the Southern Hemisphere. Everybody's concentrating up north on this one. And if we survive, we'll be looking at it and, of course, lamenting and saying never again and talking about, well, we won't let this happen again. You have a chance not to let it happen right now. Making a difference is easy to talk about. It's easy to point to and say, yes, we have to make a difference. Sometimes it's also easy to find solutions to big problems, including that of war. And I think we hear that every day with pundits and people saying, this is what should be done. This is what can be done. This is what should have been done. Well, let's cut right through it right now and take a look at a couple people who are doing a few things about war. One may be to promote war, one may be to promote peace. Both of whom have the title of His Holiness. One is Kirill of the Russian Orthodox Church, who says that this war is something that is justified. It is, in fact, holy war. Whoa, yeah, there's like a holy reason for it. Holy moly, right? And then there's Pope Francis, who technically these are brothers in Christ, right? Technically. They had talked about even getting together. They met, I think last time they met was in Cuba. They were at the airport. Yeah, I don't remember the details of it, but they were at the international airport there in Cuba, and there they met each other. They spoke briefly, and I think each invited one another to their own Vatican, the Vatican or Moscow, where the Patriarch resides. But today, something unusual happened. Pope Francis extended his hand, extended his voice, actually. He made a call. He made a call, a video conference call, which is now possible. And let me share that with you, okay? Pope Francis, on March 16th, spoke by video conference with Russian Orthodox Patriarch Kirill, a key backer of Russian President Vladimir Putin's war against Ukraine. In the call, the two religious leaders pledged their respective commitments to secure peace. That's beautiful. That's beautiful. The two of them, they want to secure peace. A Vatican communique stated that Francis rejected the justifications for the invasion as a holy war, saying, "Today we cannot speak like this. Christian awareness of the importance of peace has developed," said Francis. In recent weeks, Kirill has previously used religious language to justify his support for Russia's military aggression. Okay, so you got it? So we're using religious language to justify military aggression or justifying war, right? Yeah, this is nothing new, right? We talked about just wars throughout the centuries. We've talked about these. According to the Vatican statement, the conversation focused on the war in Ukraine and the role of Christians and their pastors in doing everything possible for peace to prevail. "We are pastors of the same holy people who believe in God, in the Holy Trinity, in the Mother of God. For this, we must unite in the effort to help peace, to help those who suffer, to seek ways of peace, to stop the fire," Francis told Russian Patriarch, according to the Vatican statement. Now, if you've been living under a rock and don't know how bad it is, there is now an estimated 2.5 million refugees because of this, of what's going on in the Ukraine. And Russian aggression is now at the point where they have bombed, I think last week when I came on with you, the maternity hospital had been bombed. This morning we woke up to the news that there was a theater with Russian markings on the map saying that it is filled with children and they have bombed it. Now, if it's indiscriminate bombing, there's no excuse for that. If it is deliberate bombing of that, then they should go to hell. And that's where we're all going, because this is not ending. This is not ending, and you could only see the patterns of escalation coming up. Can you imagine bombing children? I think I shared this with you a couple weeks ago when I was in Rwanda, and they took me to that church where they had the skulls. They had the skulls of the different genocide victims. Skulls, just one wall to the next, bones and bones, but skulls were on display on these racks. And as I'm moving through this very eerie area, post-genocide, Rwandan genocide, I come across these child skulls that are the size of like maybe an avocado, tiny, tiny. And I said, "What's going on here? Why are these on display? What threat were the children that they would be part of?" And they said, very just matter of fact, they said they kill the children because they grow up to be adults. You kill Ukrainian children because they will grow up to become adult Ukrainians. That's the logic, which is sick. Which is, it's something that, like I said earlier, you don't need to justify with Holy Scripture your stance for peace. You need to say that it's sick and it's wrong to do otherwise. Peace is the only answer. It's the only place that you can go. Let me continue. "Those who pay the bill for the war are the people. It is the Russian soldiers, and it is the people who are bombed and die," the Pope continued. "The church must not use the language of politics, but the language of Jesus." What will you know? What would Jesus do? Who would Jesus bomb? "Wars are almost always unjust," this is again quoted, "because the one who pays is the people of God," Francis continued. "Our hearts cannot help but cry in front of the children, the women, all the victims of the war. War is never the way. The spirit that unites us asks us as pastors to help the peoples who suffer from war." An earlier statement from the Russian Orthodox Church said that the two parties had a detailed discussion of the situation in Ukraine. Particular attention was paid to the humanitarian aspects of the current crisis and the actions of the Russian Orthodox Church and the Roman Catholic Church to overcome its consequences. Now, I'm going to put a link on today's show notes so you could read the entire thing in its entirety. But also, there are links here to what the Russian Orthodox Church is proclaiming, at least on their website, what their message is. Some of it's written in Russian. Some of it you can do the translation by going to Google Translate and seeing what's being put out there. I don't want to be one-sided, but it is a one-sided discussion at this point. Okay? The entire game of the Russian Orthodox is to stand up and say that we are against the Westernization. Okay, so you're against it. Well, there's other ways besides just killing people, isn't there? Maybe there isn't. And maybe that's what they're proclaiming. In which case, they get thrown out of the league that belongs to Jesus. It's pretty wild, right? Is it a bizarre idea what I'm saying? Who would Jesus bomb? Who would he bomb? Imagine him sitting in a bomber and he looks down and he sees a Russian. Think he's going to bomb him? Or is he going to say, that's my child? That would be like dropping a bomb on your kid. He's going to go over the Ukraine and he's going to see a Ukrainian and say, that's who I'll bomb. That's my child. And this is the language that Pope talks about, the language of love that we have to get to. It's very simple. It's not wrapped up in Scripture. It's not wrapped up by the Apostle Paul saying this or that to the Romans, to the Corinthians. It's Jesus Christ talking to us today. Let me read just a couple parts more, okay? The March 16 video conference between Francis and Kirill marked the first face-to-face reunion since the two met in, oh, there it is, okay, Havana, Cuba, 2016. That encounter, which was the first ever meeting between a Roman Catholic pontiff and the Russian Orthodox patriarch, seemed to signal a historic breakthrough in Catholic-Russian Orthodox relations, and plans are underway for the two to meet in person again this summer. Kirill supports for Putin's invasion has not only created new ecumenical tensions, but led to an unraveling among Russian Orthodox churches around the world. The Russian Patriarch has sought to portray the invasion as an effort to defend against the moral relativism and decadence of the West, and argued that Ukraine is part of the canonical territory of the Russian Orthodox Church. You're in my territories, I will kill you. To date, at least 160 Orthodox parishes in a dozen countries have sought to join other communions since the outbreak of the war. Now, you got to think about this. Like, do we have something to teach? I mean, look at this. I mean, we have a situation inside the Armenian church. Not even about two different churches. We're talking about the same Armenian church where they took over churches. I mean, imagine going out there and killing. Well, you don't have to imagine. They did. They killed one of our archbishops. Yeah, the they is us. Yeah, 1933. Archbishop Revonturian was assassinated in church. Oh, you don't know this story? Yeah. That's how things started in the United States, where we have this absurd reality of such few people being governed by a couple different bishops in the same territory. Uncanonical. Why? Because politics got into the church. And this is what you're seeing unfolding on a world stage on a bigger, bigger dimension. To date, while Kirill has since expressed his desire for an end to the conflict, Isn't that nice how they call it a conflict? He has refused to denounce Putin or Russia's actions against Ukraine, despite pleas from religious leaders from around the globe. Later in the day, March 16th, the Vatican Secretary of State, Cardinal Pietro Parolin, celebrated Mass for Peace at St. Peter's Basilica in the presence of the Vatican's diplomatic corps, with both Russia's Vatican ambassador and Ukraine's Vatican ambassador in attendance. Wow. Both of them there at the same Mass, right? Parolin repeated the words of Pope Francis from his March 6th homily earlier this month. This is not just a military operation, but a war. Offering an explicit rejection from the Vatican of the Russian government's repeated descriptions of their military activity as special military operations. Don't you think that if we listened more to our Lord's words, weapons would be silent? Indeed, they would not even be produced and built, said Parolin during his homily. We turn to God with a heart broken for what is happening in Ukraine. Save this land from destruction and widespread death. There you go. You see why I just love this guy? I mean, this is where you've got to put your mouth where your feet are going, and you've got to put your feet and your hands where your mouth has been talking about. And this coordination is called the Christian coordination. It's called Christianity. It's called true Christianity. St. Francis of Assisi, who came out and he said that live the gospel and whenever necessary, use your words, okay? So let's start living it. And the only way to live it is to strive for that peace. And so going around from Francis to Kirill to Francis of Assisi, I'll end it back up with John Lennon's quote, if enough people wanted peace, there would be peace. Here's Susie. I'll be back in a couple moments to wrap it up.
Before getting back to the next step with Father Vazgen, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this ministry is supported through the heartfelt donations of listeners like you. Thanks for keeping us in your prayers and partnering with this expanding and dynamic outreach. The next step is entering homes and communities with a solid message proclaiming God's message of love, forgiveness, and compassion. We look forward to your comments and words of encouragement. Please consider partnering in this dynamic ministry by making a contribution. By pressing on the donate button on our website, you can set up automatic donations, either weekly, monthly, or annually. Your donation goes a long way in furthering this ministry. Even more, tell your friends and family by sharing the Next Step link or website with them. We're on iTunes and Blueberry, as well as Facebook and Twitter. We are excited about this ministry and invite you to share in our enthusiasm. This is Susie wishing you all of God's blessings in your life. We now return to the Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Well, thank you, Susie, and thank you all of you for listening, for supporting, for praying for this ministry. And we're having another dimension of this ministry this Saturday, day after tomorrow. It is Reclaim. It is the annual Reclaim Conference, the sixth year. 6 years we've been doing this, reclaiming. And it goes back to the story of Joseph and Mary going back to Jerusalem to reclaim Jesus. Yeah, you know the story from Luke chapter 2. I love saying that story. It's one of my favorite stories because, you know, Joseph and Mary, they're not bad people, but they looked around and Jesus wasn't there. Yeah, today they'd go to family court for child neglect, right? No, not in those times. They would travel, you know, the people would travel together, the children would travel together in caravans, but Jesus was back in Jerusalem, and they went and they found him where he belonged. In other words, he wasn't lost, they were lost. And so is the story of Reclaim. You know, we have our faith, It's not that the faith is lost. We're lost. We're off track a little bit. So going back to the roots, going back to Jesus and finding where he's at, and then picking up and bringing him along for the ride. The ride, of course, is our life. And that's what Reclaim is about. Now, every year we've done a Reclaim about a particular theme. This year's theme is the Armenian Christian Family, which our Archbishop has named this year the Year of the Armenian Christian Family. So we thought it very appropriate, especially in these days and times, for us to reclaim the values. We're having some incredible speakers. And here's the deal I'm making you, my next step and listeners. Nobody else, okay? Actually. No, you know what? No, I shouldn't say actually. Everybody else will be able to tune into it, but I'm making you the deal because I'm telling you about it, okay? And you can tell your friends too. We will be streaming the speeches. There are 4 speeches. We will stream them. We are not going to have a Zoom meeting because, unfortunately, what has happened now, it didn't take too long, 2 years of us learning how to use Zoom, now people are bombing, they're coming on, and they're making obscene noises and comments and everything. So we decided no question and answer from the Zoom community. In other words, what we're going to do is we're going to stream only the speeches, but they are well worth it. The first one is about the sacrament of holy matrimony. The second one, keeping family healthy in an unhealthy world. Family is luxury is the third one. In other words, contemporary reflections on an unspoken pandemic. And finally, when families don't work, we're having a judge, the Honorable Judge Sharon Kelemkarian from San Diego, will be with us to talk about separation, divorce, and reconciliation, we hope, right? Well, all that's coming up this Saturday. It'll take place 9 o'clock. You got to tune in 9 o'clock because that's when I'm speaking, okay? I'm going to be giving the introductory remarks. This is my baby, so I treat it like my baby, and I care about it a lot. So 9 o'clock, that's California time, Pacific Daylight Time, which it looks like is going to be standard. They're just voting on it to get rid of standard time, make everything daylight savings time. Well, we'll understand it when the dust settles. But for this Saturday, we're on at 9 o'clock. That's Pacific time, okay? Pacific Daylight Time. And you want to tune in right at 9 o'clock. So how do you do that? You go to the Facebook Western Diocese or Facebook Reclaiming Faith. Okay, we'll be doing them on both of those channels. And we'll be there, okay? Now, oh, you say you don't have Facebook. Good news, you don't need Facebook. Actually, this is just the platform from which we broadcast. You don't need it. You don't need to be a member of Facebook or anything like that. All you need to do is go to Facebook Watch and put in Western Diocese or Reclaiming Faith. And just join us there, okay? In fact, what I think I'm going to do, I'm going to do this, okay? We'll put it on today's show notes. All you need to do is hit that button that says Facebook Reclaiming Faith, okay? At 9 o'clock, then leave it on all the way until about 12:30. So everything that we do in the morning session, we will stream, and you'll have it. You'll be able to watch it. You'll be able to be with us. Of course, if you are in the Southern California area, you need to be there. It's really an opportunity to get to know us on a one-on-one level, but also to hear some incredible speakers. Now, the cost to you is $35 if you want to come down, but you have to register today. Reclaim2022.eventbrite.com. I'll put that link on today's show notes too. If you don't do that and you just show up at the door, it's going to cost you $45. Yeah, you say, well, it's just money, right? Well, it's also like only a gallon of gas these days, so I would be a little bit cautious about it. Anyway, whatever the case, this is not about getting discounts. It's about being with us on that day, and I hope you can make it. And if nothing else, please go on the Facebook page even after the time, because it'll be archived there. And I'd love for you to see what we're talking about, what we're doing. That being said, this Sunday I will be the celebrant at the cathedral, at the St. Leon Cathedral. If you can, join us there or check us out again on Facebook, the Western Diocese page. Okay, I'll put both of those, the Western Diocese and Reclaiming Faith, on today's show notes, so you can just click it in one click away from being with us. Hey, it was great to be in Thousand Oaks last Sunday. Yeah, beautiful, beautiful church. You know, it's they use the St. Patrick's Episcopal Church, and we happen to be there on the week of St. Patrick's Feast. I know it's just an opportunity to drink for most people, but for us in the religious community, that was a very special day. And of course, a big shout out to my dear friend Deacon Stephen, who's there on the parish council doing a great job, and especially with the young kids. Listen, on behalf of the wonderful crew who put today's show together, Susie, my producer, and myself, Father Voskin, I look forward to taking the next step with you again next week.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
I forgot to ask you if you're seeing the same sky as we are. Bye.